Let's face it, in our busy lives, we don't eat enough fruits and vegetables. In fact, according to the CDC, only 1 in 10 Americans are eating the recommended daily amount of fruits and vegetables each day, missing out on essential vitamins, minerals, fibers, and antioxidants. And that's where Balance in Nature comes in. Balance in Nature sources only the best produce, free from pesticides, heavy metals, and harmful bacteria. And Balance in Nature is the best fruit and vegetable product on the market. They use only fresh whole fruits and vegetables inside each capsule. They don't use any GMOs, fillers, binding agents, or preservatives of any kind. You're getting real food, real science, real nutrition. I would never endorse a product that I don't use myself, and since using Balance in Nature, I feel more alert, I have more energy, my focus is sharper, and I feel great. Live life to the fullest and choose Balance in Nature. And guess what? PAS Report listeners can get 35% off the first preferred order. Start getting the recommended daily amount of fruits and vegetables you need by using code PAS at balanceofnature.com.
Welcome to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast. The PAS Report provides an honest analysis on the critical issues that matter to you without the biased media filters. Here's your host, Professor Nicholas Giordano.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the PAS Report Podcast. This is your host, Nick Giordano. I want to thank you for joining me today. And something that's not a secret out there is the increasing authoritarian policies we've been witnessing over the last few decades. But over the last few years, it seems like it's now in warp speed. The coronavirus has become the main catalyst to really move away from democratic principles towards an authoritarian state. And it's not just the United States that's facing this problem. We're seeing this around the globe. And of course, you know, you got the morons, they're going to scream, it's all in the name of saving lives, that we have to do everything we can to minimize risk to absolute zero, which is an impossibility. And I want everyone to think how much has been given up in this process, how much we the people have given up in this process. Think about how we completely did away with many of our long-standing traditions. We've thrown away constitutional norms. And ask yourself, for what? For what? No one seems to ask that question, especially if they're on the left. But if you really think about it, all these countries did whatever they could to undermine democracy. They instituted authoritarian decree after authoritarian decree. They undermined democracy in every way. And they revealed their true faces with their authoritarian policies. So what did you exactly get out of this? That's what I want to know. Are we any safer? Have their authoritarian policies stamped out COVID? Have they made any difference whatsoever? And now you're seeing the fear porn being ramped up again with the new coronavirus variant, Omicron. And literally, within a couple of days, the petty tyrants, they're out in full force decreeing another round of authoritarian policies, issuing new states of emergency, and they continually want to empower themselves because they think that you're too dumb to make your own decisions, that you're an ignorant fool who cannot be trusted. So states of emergency are supposed to be temporary. Yet they're being used as the main vehicle to usurp more power and authority from us. And do you think that it's going to make any difference with the coronavirus? Like, do you really believe that the new mandates that are coming down the pike, the new decrees that are happening, do you think these are somehow going to make coronavirus magically go away? And that brings me to today's discussion. There's a new report that was issued by the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, also known as IDEA. This report warns about a perfect storm that is upon us and how the world is becoming more authoritarian. There is zero doubt about it. I've been saying that for a year. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. I mean, let's be honest here. Now, the report is flawed. I'll state that right off the bat, and I'm going to explain why they discredit themselves. But the conclusion isn't that far off base. It's how they got to their conclusion that reveals who they really are and their globalist approach and everything. But I'm going to explain it to you. And see, that's why you listen to the PAS report. I read these boring reports so you don't have to. And believe me, some of them are tedious to go through. Before I jump in, make sure you visit the PAS Report website, PASReport.com. Sign up for the newsletter and follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Now, getting to this report, there's a lot of different layers to the report, but first, I should tell you a little bit about this organization. So the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, I have the link up at the PAS report to their charter. In theory, it sounds like a good organization. Their goal is a commitment to the rule of law, human rights, and the basic principles of democratic pluralism and strengthening democracy. Sounds fine, right? However, when you read their latest report, The Global State of Democracy in 2021, which I have a link up to on the website, you'll see that this organization does take on a globalist approach. It falls in line with this idea of the Great Reset, which I did an episode on several months ago. It's a fantastic episode, so check it out. But the reason I'm highlighting this report, so even though I disagree with a lot of its content of how they got to their conclusion, the reason I am highlighting it is because their conclusion is right, that the world is moving towards authoritarianism. And while I disagree with some of the reasons they stated, there are other parts that do deserve attention. So even if I disagree with a document, I'm not going to completely dismiss it. I'm going to take the good and the bad with it. Now, I'm not going to waste time talking about how or why authoritarian regimes have become more tyrannical with authoritarian policies since COVID. That's pretty much self-explanatory. It's what authoritarian regimes do. They concentrate power because they want to exert total influence over society. That's simply common sense. What I do want to focus on is how democracies or countries that have democratic principles infused within the system, how they transition into authoritarian governments. And it's the idea of democratic backsliding. So it's a fairly simple concept to understand. In a nutshell, it means the gradual decline of the quality of democracy, the continued undermining of democratic institutions that are supposed to guard against authoritarian policies. Keeping that in mind, it's also important to recognize that governments and nations go through life cycles. So we see it constantly. And Plato argued that democracies will usually end in tyrannies, that that's part of the democratic life cycle that exists within nations. Now, there are a few areas of the report where they get it right. For instance, they explain the drivers of democratic decline, and I would say they get it mostly right there. They talk about how the increasing political polarization is linked to democratic backsliding. And this is certainly true. I've seen this on both sides of the political aisle, where people will essentially approve of authoritarian policies as long as it's someone they support in power. Take executive orders, because I think that's the easiest way to explain it. When you look at the last several administrations, and I warn that we are seeing the growing use of executive orders that push policy agendas. Executive orders are not supposed to be modifying, manipulating, amending, creating, or dismantling laws. That's why we have a Congress. It's why a legislative branch exists. However, the use of executive orders, it's not that it necessarily increased. I mean, if you go back to FDR's era, he used, I think it was something like 1,400 executive orders. And then if you go with the last several administrations, it's been about 600, 700, 800 executive orders. It's the subject content of those executive orders. It's what those executive orders actually do that has a far more profound impact on our overall society. More importantly, it sidesteps the legislative branch, the legislative process, which is essential because those are the people that actually do directly represent us. Those are the people that we actually send. Even though they're utterly useless, we elect them to directly represent us. Now, if we think back to during the Obama administration, Obama's supporters would constantly say that Republicans in Congress were obstructing the president's agenda. And so because Republicans were obstructionists, President Obama should push through his agenda by issuing executive orders. In fact, President Obama, he threatened it himself. Remember when he said, "I have a pen and I'll use that pen." And he made good on that threat. I warned about this back then. First of all, the idea that Republicans in Congress are obstructing the president, and so the president has to issue executive orders to circumvent Congress, is just plain stupidity. Why the hell do you think Congress exists in general? If Congress is there to simply rubber stamp a president's agenda, why do we have Congress? What would be the point of them? The whole point of a Congress is to obstruct the president, especially if they're of the opposite side of the political spectrum. That's the whole point of Congress. And then it's the president's job to persuade members of Congress, not force, not sign an executive order, but to persuade members of Congress to adopt their policy agenda. And if a president can't do that, then so be it. They can't do it. Yet Obama supporters were saying that because Republicans wouldn't simply roll over and accept President Obama's agenda, he should do everything through executive order. The people that were opposed to President Obama was screaming, "It's tyrannical, it's unconstitutional, it's authoritarian." Then we saw a reversal of this when President Trump was in office. Many Trump supporters justified it. They said, well, Obama did the same thing. And so if Democrats are going to be obstructionist, if they're not going to work with the President of the United States, well, then President Trump should do the same thing. So those that were cheerleading President Obama are now calling President Trump a fascist, a dictator for what he was doing, and vice versa. We're seeing again play out President Biden. Only President Biden's decrees are much more worrisome. And they're more worrisome because of the arrogance the ruling class has shown, because they've taken off their masks, and then you have President Biden saying things like this.
Our patience is wearing thin.
So it's obvious him and his administration have little regard for the way the American people think, and it seems that when it's a person in office or a policy that we agree with, many are okay with authoritarianism. I've always been consistent on this because I know where it goes, and I've criticized all presidents that I feel are using executive orders in order to push legislation, essentially, in order to change laws, modify and manipulate laws. I don't like it. It should not be happening, but we've allowed it to happen under both Republican and Democrat administrations. So we have to pay attention to it. And remember, consistency is important. When you sit there and criticize one person for doing something, you got to criticize the other person as well, even if you support or agree with those policies. It's our job to push back. It's our job to question policies. It's our job to hold the officials accountable. Another area that this report gets right is when it explains that economic crises are also tied to Democratic backsliding. This is because many immediately, whenever you face an economic crisis, the people will immediately look to government because of their economic suffering. And I understand that. If you're in a financially desperate situation, living paycheck to paycheck, and something happens, an economic decline comes in, you're desperate. You look to the government to provide some level of support. Unfortunately, this only contributes to the dependency on the state. And when you're increasingly dependent on the government becomes more authoritarian. This is simply natural. Another area where the report gets it right is that similar nations begin to mimic each other. Just look at COVID. Look at how all these so-called free societies instituted similar policies, some a little bit more stricter than others, but the policies are fairly similar. One country gets the ball rolling, everyone follows suit. The only one that didn't was Sweden. And sadly, there are too few Swedens out there. Unfortunately, most of these nations took the authoritarian route. But then the authors bring up a few points that I completely disagree with. They go off the deep end a little bit. So the report talks about how populism leads to authoritarian policies. This is a bunch of nonsense. Doing what's in your country's interest and your people's interest is not authoritarian, even though they want to make it out to be. In fact, that's what nation states should be doing. It doesn't make any sense to implement policies that are in another country's interest at the expense of your own country and your own people. Yet we have all these idiots that are in charge of this country, all these officials that are constantly denigrating their own citizens, the ones that put them in office, the ones that they're supposed to be beholden to, and they sit there and they help other countries. I mean, just look at the idea of a border wall, and I'm not getting into the border wall debate here, but look at the border wall. So in the United States, if we build a border wall, we're told that's racist. We're not allowed to keep illegal immigrants out of the country. Yet we will fund the Democrat-led Congress. We'll pay for border walls in places like Jordan, places like Israel, places like Egypt. So why do we say that they get to have border walls built by the U.S. taxpayers, essentially, but we can't have one? Because if we put a border wall up, it's racist. And that's where the report goes off the deep end like that. Now, some of the conclusions of the report are that number of countries moving in an authoritarian direction in 2020 now outnumber those going in the democratic direction. This is the first time that we've seen such a negative trend. And when you look at democracies emerging since the end of the Cold War, we've never seen a period like this. The pandemic is the vehicle that's created this situation. For the first time, the United States actually made the list of democratic backsliding. Democratically elected governments, including established democracies, increasingly are adopting authoritarian tactics. And this democratic backsliding, unfortunately, enjoys popular support. I mean, if you look at the far left, they are crazy. They're insane. They use words like deprogram, re-educate, purge from society. Anyone who disagrees with them on the issues, that is insane talk. And yet here we are. But to me, the most important aspect of the report is where it states that the pandemic has made it easier to justify authoritarian behavior. Because that's exactly what it's done. Now, the report does discredit itself because it only gives a passing reference to some of the policies during the pandemic. At the same time, just look at all the so-called liberal democracies. Look at them. The ones that we used to hold in such high esteem, including our own, that bypass normal procedures and legislative bodies. They govern by decree. The authoritarian policies implemented by the petty tyrants, particularly the heads of states and the public health sector, have been nothing short of astonishing. When we look at all these so-called liberal democracies, we clearly see the continued violation of civil liberties. When chief executives can determine when, where, and how you practice your faith. When they determine when you could leave your home, what you must wear when you leave your home, and where you could go once you leave your home, how is that a free society? When they determine who or how many people can come into your home, or when children can go to school, or who you could associate with, how is that a free society? When they deem what businesses are essential and which ones aren't, when they pick winners and losers within the economy, how is that a free society? When they force children to wear masks throughout an entire school day, when in some of the so-called liberal democracies, they force quarantines, they literally remove family members from the home and put them in quarantines. How is that a free society? When you're told you can't speak to someone that you see that you know in a grocery store, you can't speak to your neighbor, or you can't go out for a jog, or you can't watch a sunset, how is that a free society? I ask everyone out there, but particularly those that support these draconian measures, the authoritarian measures, how is this any different than what they do in authoritarian countries like China, like North Korea? How is it any different? Why is it different? Oh, because they're doing it in the name of a crisis that gives our governments the ability to be able to rule by decree, that gives them the right to throw out the Constitution? Are we going to really say that democracy and civil liberties only exist during normal times, but the second a crisis emerges, all that goes out the window? Because I hate to break it to you, with everything we're witnessing, it is not a free society. Self-determination no longer exists. And it's all because you have the sheep that want to feel safe. That's what it is. They want to feel safe. They want to feel like they're protected. Just take a listen to this clip, because it speaks to exactly what I'm saying.
Florida, for example, is learning to live with it. Half my family live in Florida, and they're loving life. Why shouldn't we do what Florida's doing?
Because it's a danger to public health and safety. So, if America...
At what point do you draw the line? Do you know it's dangerous to cross this road? You could die.
Yeah, so I wait until the lights go.
Why don't you open up and let people take their own precautions like you would to carefully cross the road? Well, wear a mask and do all the things they say, hand sanitizer, well, keep your distance. Well, you could do it.
Yeah, I could do it.
And protect yourself.
But that doesn't fully protect me.
Well, it does if you keep your meter and a half. If all those things work and you can get vaccinated.
Yeah, but that doesn't fully protect me.
So you want 100% protection and then we can be free?
Yeah.
That's not even possible.
How do you know?
You hear what he said? He could get the vaccine. He could wear a mask. He could socially distance. But that doesn't fully protect him. And that's the problem right there. You have people like this who believe that if they do everything the government tells them, it's not enough. It's not enough. They need to force everyone else to do it so that they feel protected, even though they're still not protected. So your rights need to be curbed all because of these scared and pathetic people. They want to feel better. They want to feel protected. I've never seen so many adults act like scared little children, but that's what we have right now. That's what exists out there. And I want to tell these people that are like, you know, fully masked up and they got like their vaccines. They got the 10th booster shot. They sanitize all day, every day. They try and maintain as much social distance as they can. I want to ask them, if all these authoritarian policies have been working out for us, why is the coronavirus still here? I mean, take the draconian of the draconian. Take communist China, for instance, because there were a lot of Americans, and I'll talk about it more later, but there were a lot of Americans that said that we should adopt the China model when it comes to combating COVID, where they would literally lock people in an apartment. One person test positive for COVID in an apartment building, you lock everyone in. They'll put wood bars on the doors of that apartment building so no one could go in or out. That's how demented they were. Coronavirus still exists in China, doesn't it? Came from there, too. And now the fear porn, it's being ramped up. You have the Omicron strain out there. And you see people going apoplectic. They're trying to instill the fear again. And there are more COVID deaths this year post-vaccine than there were last year pre-vaccine. So what exactly are we doing? How have any of the policies that have been implemented actually have worked? It would be nice if we actually had this discussion. It would be nice if the media actually asked these questions. That's why the media exists, or at least that's why they're supposed to exist. It would have been nice if this report went far more in depth about the draconian decrees that's going on in the so-called liberal democratic world, because these are the primary reasons we are seeing democratic backsliding. These are the reasons that we are seeing the increasing authoritarianism within the world. Unfortunately, the report discredits itself when it focuses far more time and energy on other areas. And I want to briefly go through the parts that I disagree with. Once again, I'll always explain what I agree with and what I don't agree with, because the parts that I'm going to explain that I don't agree with shows that it is nothing more than a globalist push as part of the Great Reset, the part of this new normal. When you read this document, you'll see the usual social justice, Marxist verbiage, equity, equitable, equal. It's all BS. In fact, in one section, it reads that democracy should further, quote, equitable and accountable sustainable development and post-pandemic recovery. And going forward, the alliance should support democracies to deliver services that citizens want and need politically, economically, and socially, end quote. First of all, what the hell does equitable and accountable sustainable development and post-pandemic recovery even mean? What does that mean? It's just a bunch of words being thrown out there. But the last part is where we have a problem. Deliver services that citizens want and need politically, economically, and socially. I want a mansion. I want an in-ground swimming pool. There's a lot of things that I want out there. Wants and needs, though, are two very different things. There are a lot of things people want, but it doesn't mean that they just get them. Doesn't mean that the government gives it to them. It doesn't mean that the government can or should provide them with their wants. In fact, the whole purpose of government is where the elected officials have to practice statesmanship. It's incumbent on the officials to balance what's in the people's interest versus what's in the interest of the country. They have to practice this idea of statesmanship, and by simply providing everyone with all their wants and needs only makes people more dependent on the government apparatus. It leads to authoritarianism, it leads to authoritarian policies, and it's actually worse than that. And the reason it's worse than that is because what we're saying is we're encouraging politicians to just give us everything that we ask for. Everything that we ask for. The future be damned. It doesn't matter about future generations. And so if I'm a politician, I'm campaigning, and I'm looking to do what's in the best interest of the country, and I'm looking to solve this budget crisis that we have, to solve this debt crisis that we have, who's going to vote for the person that tells them that they're going to take stuff away from them? Who's going to vote for that person? Why do you think all the politicians are constantly promising all this different crap and they never tackle the issues that we have? They never tackle the problems that we're facing, especially when it comes to the fiscal problems that we're facing. It's because they want to cater to everyone's wants and needs because that buys them votes. It's a form of bribery. You vote for me, I'm going to push X, Y, and Z. I'm going to make sure you get the, you know, dependent daycare and the child tax credits and the tuition-free college. That's bribery. And they have no regard. But sooner or later, the economic house of cards falls. But who do we look to solve that problem? Well, we're going to look to government when that happens, right? So the ones that create the problem, we're going to be the ones that want the same people that created the problem to solve the problem. That doesn't make much sense to me. But then again, there's a lot of things that don't make sense to me in this day and age. Another area where this report fails is when it says questioning the outcome of elections leads to democratic backsliding. And you know they're particularly talking about President Trump, former President Trump, and they actually name him in this. It's the main reason that the United States was actually added to this report for the first time, and it's completely ridiculous. It's not only ridiculous, it's actually insane. The report states, electoral integrity is increasingly being questioned, often without evidence, even in established democracies. The former U.S. President Donald Trump's baseless allegations during the 2020 presidential election have had a spillover effect, including in Brazil, Mexico, Myanmar, and Peru, among others, end quote. Now, really? I mean, you're going to bring Brazil and Mexico and Myanmar and compare that to the United States in the 2020 presidential election? I mean, if you look at the countries that they're mentioning, these countries have been ripe with corruption for generations. It's not like it's something that's new. And it's not to insult the people of those countries. We have our own forms of corruption here in the United States. But questioning the results of the election isn't the same as, I don't know, the several coups that have happened in Myanmar over the course of the last decade and a half. That's just completely ridiculous to even put us on the same level as Myanmar. And it should discredit these people that wrote the report. It's sheer and utter stupidity. There are legitimate questions that have yet to be answered regarding the 2020 presidential election. And in reality, if questioning the integrity of elections was the key indicator of Democratic backsliding, then why wasn't it a big deal when the Democrats continually questioned the 2000 election or the 2004 election? Why didn't we get the Democratic backsliding label in 2016, where Democrats in the media repeatedly questioned the integrity of our elections, and they openly pushed the lie of Russian collusion, where many in the Democrat Party continually stated they used a hashtag, not my president, for President Trump, continually undermined his presidency by saying he was a lapdog of Vladimir Putin, that he was being blackmailed by Vladimir Putin. So all of a sudden, now questioning the integrity of an election is now a problem? Basically, according to this report, if the ruling class candidate loses, then you could question the integrity of the election. You could question the results of the election. However, if the ruling class candidate wins, you're not allowed to ask questions. You see how that works? If a democracy is so weak that it cannot withstand questions, it doesn't deserve to stand at all. And what better way to strengthen democracy and democratic principles than by having a nationwide forensic audit that would either show that there was no fraud, or it would show that there is fraud and we're taking care of it to make sure it never happens again. It would show if mistakes were made and then we could correct those mistakes that may have been made. Wouldn't that strengthen our democracy? But instead we're saying that you can't ask questions because if you ask questions, well, that's a threat to democracy. The logic these people work with is completely bizarre. There's no doubt about that. And I could even go further. Just listen to the Molly Hemingway interview I did a few weeks ago. It was a fantastic episode, another fantastic PAS report episode. So check it out. But she shows hard evidence of how the media and the big tech giants manipulated our electoral process. I would argue that is a far bigger threat to democratic values than questioning the results of an election. We have every right to question the results of an election. Yet this report doesn't mention anything about that, even though big tech is more powerful than many countries that exist out there. And to show you how this report selectively cherry-picks its information, this one's hysterical. In one section, it criticizes the Polish president for, quote, trying to bypass Parliament and the National Electoral Commission to move forward with an all-vote-by-mail presidential election. Criticism was raised about unconstitutional changes to the electoral law less than 6 months before the election removal of the functions from the National Electoral Commission, end quote. Now, I wonder if when they were writing this section, if they were able to do it with a straight face. Because if I'm going by what they say about Poland, so changing election laws 6 months prior to a presidential election, it's going to thrust Poland into a backsliding democracy. But there was no mention of that exact thing happening here in the United States, where you had a number of states change their election policies and procedures during the election year. Even worse was that many of these changes were pushed through by chief executives and by the courts, even though Article 2, Section 1 of the United States Constitution explicitly says that state legislative bodies are the ones responsible for changing election laws. So when reading this section of this report, in the words of Joe Biden,
come on, man.
It's funny how this actually works, isn't it? The report calls out a number of Eastern European countries as using the coronavirus to consolidate power and implement authoritarian policies, yet nowhere did they mention France, Britain, Italy, Germany, other European countries that had just as many, if not more, restrictive authoritarian policies. Nowhere does the report call out Australia, New Zealand, Canada, which had some of the most restrictive policies in this entire world. So the report did bring up a few good points, but then it goes off the deep end. It's right when it says that the world's becoming authoritarianism, but it's not necessarily for the reasons that they mentioned, the reasons that they focused on. However, when you look at our petty tyrants here in the United States, you cannot question them. You are not allowed to question them. You are not allowed to dictate to them because, well, you don't have to look far to see these petty tyrants or to hear these petty tyrants. Just look at Lord Fauci, who once again stated that any criticism of him, it's really a criticism against science. Those that criticize him are anti-science because he, and he alone, is the embodiment of science. He is the essence of science. It all flows through the great, the noble Lord Fauci. How the hell and why the hell is this guy still around? I mean, if you want a definition of narcissism, just look at him. His picture should be in the dictionary. And I've had it with this idiot. I don't know why this administration even lets him speak to the media anymore. It's not like he's doing them any good. Now, there are some that are still listening to Lord Fauci, but most people aren't. You have the Fauci, the true Lord Fauci believers out there that have the St. Fauci candles that they burn, and they'll pray to it each night. They'll make sacrifices with the St. Fauci candles. Maybe they'll burn some tofu or some other vegan crap that they eat. But let's be honest here. Nobody's listening to Fauci anymore. No, he's not doing any good. And it appears that Lord Fauci spends more time in media interviews than anything else. Just take a listen to the latest ramblings of this narcissistic sociopath.
So anybody who spends lies and threatens and all that theater that goes on with some of the investigations and the congressional committees and the Rand Pauls and all that other nonsense, that's noise, Margaret. That's noise. I know what my job is.
Senator Cruz told the attorney general you should be prosecuted.
Yeah. I have to laugh at that. I should be prosecuted. What happened on January 6th, Senator?
Do you think that this is about making you a scapegoat to deflect from President Trump?
Of course. You have to be asleep not to figure that one out.
Well, there are a lot of Republican senators taking aim at this.
That's okay. I'm just going to do my job. And I'm going to be saving lives, and they're going to be lying.
It seems another layer of danger to play politics around matters of life and death.
Right, exactly. And to me, that's unbelievably bad, because all I want to do is save people's lives. I mean, anybody who's looking at this carefully realizes that there's a distinct anti-science flavor to this. So if they get up and criticize science, nobody's going to know what they're talking about. But if they get up and really aim their bullets at Tony Fauci, well, people could recognize there's a person there. So it's easy to criticize. But they're really criticizing science, because I represent science. That's dangerous. To me, that's more dangerous than the slings and the arrows that get thrown at me. And if you damage science, you are doing something very detrimental to society long after I leave.
I mean, really? It's clear that Fauci is nothing more than a political hack. He has become a complete political hack. He is someone that is devoid of reality. He looks in the mirror and he really thinks like he's this moral holy warrior crusader. He looks in the mirror and says, I am science. That if you put all the great scientists through the course of human history together, that they still wouldn't equal the all-knowing Lord Fauci. That's what he probably does when he looks in the mirror. I mean, just think about it. He's supposed to answer to elected representatives in the House and Senate, and yet he shows clear contempt for anyone that challenges him. He doesn't want to be challenged. He wants everyone to bow down to the altar of Lord Fauci. He prays on him for being blessed that the embodiment of science exists and he's part of the United States. And then you have the now CDC director praising China's authoritarian policies when it comes to the coronavirus. And here's a clip from her from a year ago. But this is what she truly believes. So take a listen.
Have you seen examples of this kind of focused protection work either, you know, other countries here in the United States at other times? Is this something that we know can work?
Well, that's actually my biggest challenge with it, is I think that this is what Sweden tried to do. This was their plan. What we know from Sweden is that their death rate, their per capita death, well, there is 591 per million. That rivals the United States at 593 per million. To give you a sense of what lockdowns were able to do in other countries, and I mean really strict lockdowns, in China, their death rate is 3 per million. So when you look at what Sweden was trying to do and what they are trying to emulate in Sweden, it didn't work. They were unable to protect them.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your CDC director that was talking about that. And we have to ask, what is she really saying? Like, what is she really saying? That we should adopt China's policies? First of all, you have to be an idiot to believe any of the numbers that China puts out there. The communist regime of China is notorious for lying, covering things up. It's actually how we got into this whole mess in the first place, that we were trusting what they were saying, and they were completely lying to not just the United States, but the entire international community. So let's just be careful when we're sitting there and we're going to praise China. Let's be honest about that. And she's not the only one that's heaped praise on China's authoritarian policies. Just think of Hillary Clinton when she called for the regulation of political speech to avoid the, quote, manipulation of information, and that social media should pay a price for what they are doing to our democracy. Now, it's not that she wants social media to pay a price for the nonstop bullying that happens to the teenagers on their platforms. It's not that she wants to pay the social media to pay the price for the increase in the suicide rates that we're seeing, largely because of social media. She doesn't want social media to pay the price because of the increased depression and anxiety that's out there as a direct result of social media, particularly when it comes to young girls. She doesn't want social media to pay the price because they've been silencing conservative voices or censoring conservative voices. She wants social media to pay the price, the big tech giants to pay the price for not silencing conservatives enough. She wants them to pay a price for not silencing those that attack her or the ruling class narratives. What Hillary Clinton is calling for is authoritarian speech controls to be implemented. Make no mistake, that's what she's calling for. You have the weasel, Congressman Adam Schiff, who wants these big tech giants to censor anything he deems misinformation or false information, even though he's been peddling in misinformation and false information for 5 damn years. But he doesn't want that to be censored. He doesn't want that to be silenced. You have a Harvard law professor, an Arizona State University law professor, saying that China largely had it right when it comes to regulating the internet and speech. And they call for a Chinese-style censorship in the United States. You have the White House flagging posts for the tech giants. You have one of the most powerful Democrats, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And I know that's scary to say. Believe me, it frightens me just saying it, so it's got to be scary to hear. But she's saying that social media platforms should take down what she deems as lies. This is the same person that said that it's not important to be factually correct if you're morally correct. And the tech giants have been all too willing to acquiesce to these idiots. And it's not just the tech giants. Look at corporate America as well. Look at how corporate America has weaponized our economy, essentially punishes states. When you have duly elected state legislative bodies pass laws that the corporate giants don't like, they'll punish them. Take Georgia, for instance. You had a state legislative body passing voting laws in an effort to provide more oversight and control over the election process. And what did the woke corporations do? They threatened Georgia and they punished them economically. These authoritarians said, we don't care that the state legislature was elected by the people. We don't care that the state legislative body represents the people. We don't care that the state legislature has every single constitutional right in crafting election laws. Since the powers that be in the woke corporation, since they don't like the law, they must punish the state economically to show them who is really in charge. See, even our corporate world doesn't care about democratic principles and shows that they're nothing more than petty tyrants themselves. How many states have been threatened or punished because the states passed laws affirming the very basics of biology and gender? How many? Who the hell do these companies think they are? So they're authoritarians as well. You have all these people calling for a new normal. And then you have many of the blind sheep that just sit there and they accept the idea of the new normal. Oh, new normal sounds good to me. Yet they never defined what the new normal is, what the new normal entails. And these sheep will just follow and say, yeah, new normal. We need a new normal. Think about that. So many are willing to accept this idea of a new normal without ever questioning what exactly does this new normal consist of. Once again, even if you disagree with me, ask yourself, do you believe the new normal is going to provide people with more power within society? That we're going to have more power and authority within the system? Or do you think the new normal is going to grant government more power and authority? Which one do you think is more likely? And the answer is clear. It always is clear. It's obvious the government and the bureaucrats are the ones that get granted extraordinary powers in this new normal that they're talking about. And we are the ones that suffer because of it. In many jurisdictions, we've been operating under emergency decree for nearly 2 years. We've relegated state legislative bodies to the sidelines, allowed chief executives to do whatever the hell they wanted, granted them enormous amounts of power. States of emergency were meant to be used for short periods of time. Yet we're witnessing this perpetual state of emergency as more and more of these petty tyrants push authoritarianism. You do have democratic values under attack, not from adversaries like Russia or China, but from within the country itself. You have these wannabe dictators who have no regard for individuals. They believe that they're morally superior, and it's up to them to save you and save society. And unfortunately, there are too many people out there who'll defend. They'll defend and justify the authoritarian policies, all because they want to feel protected. because they are weak, sad cowards. They want to feel safe. As I said before, I've never seen so many grown adults act like scared little children. It's really pathetic. You need to grow up in this country. And when you're looking at it, I'd be saying the same thing if I saw Republicans seizing control like this. I don't care which political party is responsible. Because all politicians, all officials, they like power. They crave power. And we don't have the noble officials that existed 30, 40, 50 years ago that understood what public service was all about. They understood that they're there to serve the public. They're not there to push their ideological agenda. That if you're part of the bureaucracy, you implement the programs. You don't sit there and weaponize the bureaucracy for political purposes. Now, there are some good bureaucrats out there that do exist today. Sadly, they're marginalized. And unfortunately, have all these people in the United States that are clueless to the fact that full protection and safety are something that's nothing more than an illusion. Continuing down this path, sooner or later, reality will kick in. I could assure you of that. And your illusion of feeling safe and protected because government's forcing everyone to do all these things is going to quickly vanish. Now, hopefully we never get to that point where you regret it. Hopefully people begin to open their eyes, but we're going to have to wait and see what happens. We're going to have to wait and see how this plays out. And I don't think anyone could truly predict it. Now, we are seeing signs of encouragement. We are seeing more and more people beginning to speak up and push back. However, is it too late? And is it going to be short-lived? We don't know. And that's what we have to wait and see. As always, don't forget to share this episode with family and friends, including your liberal friends. I don't mind, you know, far-left people listening to this podcast. I enjoy their comments sometimes. Do it out the threats, but other than that, that's all right. If you're listening to this podcast on an Apple device, make sure you take 30 seconds, write a good review, give it a 5-star rating, share this podcast with family, friends, influencers, social media, everywhere out there, and follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. I want to thank you for joining me. I want you to stay safe and make sure you tune in on Monday. I got a phenomenal guest coming in. He is back. I'm not going to tell you who he is, but he is someone that their voice has been sorely missed over the last few months. But he is back now, so you'll find out on Monday who that is.
Thank you for listening to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast.
Have a good one. Bye.
Be sure to rate, share, and subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. Also, visit PASReport.com and follow us on Twitter @PASReport.